Bridge podcast. I'm super excited and grateful to be here with you. My name is Heather Choate with Mark Johnston. We're the co-owners and founders of High Thrive Coaching. How's it going, Mark?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing today?
Awesome. Yeah, I really love our topic today, which is hope versus action. We're calling it the ultimate showdown to save your marriage because there's some misunderstanding about this topic, and we want to show you how to save your marriage from divorce. So if you're facing a divorce right now, leave a comment right now in the chat and let us know if your spouse is wanting out, if you're currently separated, and what your situation is so that we can give you resources and help with that. But before we dive in to hope versus action, we're going to share our client win of the week. Mark, you want to share this one?
Yeah, this one came from a message to us. So this person's saying, Path helped me to save my marriage, Path being one of the courses that we offer here. So I'm trying to keep working on that. And we respond, I'm very glad to know that. Keep on thriving. They said, your program and videos were the reason I was able to save my marriage. I'm always, you know, like I don't always interact with all the Path course people. That's more of like a do-it-yourself sort of thing. So I'm always happy to see people report some of the material that we've created has really had an impact on their lives. It's nice to hear some of these things here and there.
Yeah, it is awesome. And we asked you guys, and I'd love to hear a comment because this really has to do with this Path process, right? What do you guys feel like you need to have first to save a failing marriage? So leave a comment, let us know as you're watching. If you're watching the replay, leave a comment as well. Do you feel like you need hope first or do you need action first? We asked you guys this same question in our Facebook groups and the responses were pretty mixed. I'm seeing a lot of you need both, you need action, you need hope, both action. So it's kind of like split about 50-50. Someone said someone that actually gives a crap, which kind of made me chuckle, but it's true. If your spouse isn't willing, then that's really challenging. However, there are still things that you can do, which is exactly why we have our Path process, because it's for those who are wanting to work on the marriage, even though their spouse is not willing to work on it with them. And then I saw this one here. One of you guys nailed it. Action, hope can come later. And he said, I've seen your earlier postings on this before, wink. So why would we say that we need action before hope? Well, I want to give a little bit of a case study here based on some of our clients' experience. But one of our clients, we're going to call him Matt, you know, he's worried that there wasn't any hope for his marriage. Now, Mark, we've helped thousands and thousands of couples, right? How confident or hopeful are most people when they start this process?
Oh, not very much at all.
Yeah, no. Most of them are like, I don't know if this can work. I'm afraid it's too little too late. I don't know how we could possibly turn this around. I need a miracle, right? And so in this case, like many of our clients, Matt's wife wanted a divorce, right? And she wouldn't even talk to him about the marriage. They could talk about surface level things, but not about the relationship. She immediately put up walls. Does that sound familiar? Again, comment, let us know. So Matt, probably like a lot of you out there, tried everything that he could think of, working on himself, giving her space, meeting her needs, going to therapy. He read self-help books. He listened to YouTube and podcasts. He tried losing weight and working out and getting into better shape. But maybe like a lot of you guys, nothing seemed to work. Mark, what have you all seen that like other people are trying to do out there to turn the relationship around and they're really just spinning their wheels and they're not getting anywhere?
Well, a lot of the times I see a lot of desperation. So we talk about this sometimes, a lot of begging, pleading, inviting the other person to go to therapy. I've had some clients where they try to guilt their spouse into coming back, like, well, you know, you're going to be throwing away all this other stuff. Your kids aren't going to speak to you anymore. Whatever happens to be, they're trying to put some amount of pressure. And I find that just utterly fascinating because I'm like, that's, why would you do those sort of things? It might be true, but that's not the focus. That's not the reason why this person is pulling away.
Yeah. And I honestly, I know like we could, sometimes from where we're at, Mark and I could be like, well, why would you do that? But I've been in those shoes though at the same time, not maybe to the same extent, but when my husband pulls away, I tend to act out of desperation and fear too, right? I do the pleading and the, you know, pushing to try to talk about things. And so like our client here, sometimes those things just do not work. And yeah. Even if you're trying to do a lot of these positive things like Matt did, working out, working on yourself, going to therapy, like doing all the self-improvement, but your marriage is really getting nowhere, right? Nothing seems to work. Why is that, right? So he started worrying that maybe she was even involved with someone else. Was there an emotional affair? Was there a physical affair? And all of his friends, all of his family told him just to move on. You need to let her go. Some even told him you need to find someone who actually deserves you. But at the end of the day, Matt still loved her. He didn't have hope when he first talked to us. He thought our success stories were great. That's great for them. I'm happy that worked out for them, but felt that maybe his situation was somehow, you know, different from all those others, that his wife was too stubborn and he did not see how this would work for him. And it really came down to one question. We asked him, if you don't do this, will you regret it? Will you regret looking back knowing you had a chance to save your marriage and you didn't take it? He answered, yes, I would regret it. I still love her. If there's any chance at all, I'll take it. You see, we knew there was hope, even though he couldn't see it. He did not have to have hope to decide if it was worth every effort. And so he started coaching with us, even though he didn't have hope that it would work out. And we told him that's really normal. Most of our clients start in a similar place.
Yes.
That is why I say hope is actually overrated. And in fact, if you're waiting to have hope to turn the situation around, it could be a huge hindrance to the relationship actually turning around. So most people think they have to have hope. What they actually need is a proven process and action steps to take. When you start to take some positive action, it's going to change the momentum of the relationship. It's going to shift what's happening in the relationship. And when those shifts happen, then you will see the evidence of your marriage changing. And that positive momentum and the evidence, oh my goodness, now she's actually talking to me. Oh my goodness, she just stopped talking about divorce. Oh my goodness, I'm not so freaked out all the time about this, right? That's when they get the hope. They realize, okay, things are changing. I see the evidence with my own eyes. So if we're hoping for seeds to grow without planting them in the ground and watering them, AKA like taking action, that is what most people are doing with their marriage. They want the assurance that it's all going to work out from the beginning. And the bottom line is, you don't know that. I don't know that. But the people that succeed in turning their marriage around, even when their spouse is wanting out, are the people that are taking action first. What they're doing is they're planting the seed, they're watering it. And then when they see the plant sprouting, now they have hope. Now they see the evidence of what they're wanting and not the other way around. So if you don't have hope right now, I want you to know you are okay. Okay. What matters most is that you take action on your marriage. And Matt, our client here, he took action. He did not have hope at first. Like Mark said, most of our clients start without having a whole lot of hope, without knowing it's going to work. But now he knows his marriage is going to be all right. She took divorce off the table, which we're going to talk about today. Step one is hitting the pause button. She started asking him on dates and she's talking to him now, which is step two, where they start to take steps towards you. And she is working on herself to be a better, more supportive wife for him. So do not wait for hope to take action that will yield the results. Let's start to take some action now. And Mark and I, we are all about giving you guys results and helping you guys know what actions to take. That is one of the hardest things for people to know at the beginning is, what do I even do to turn this situation around? So we're going to show you how to take some action so that then you will start to see that positive momentum and that evidence that things are working that then will give you the hope. So Mark, let's dive into it. What are some of the first actions that people can take, even if their spouse is checked out, even if they're threatening divorce or not really wanting to talk about the relationship?
Well, I want to first comment a little bit, and it will relate into some of these first steps. So a lot of what you were describing, we were saying, okay, you know, it's okay that people don't have hope. You take action first. And I do think, you know, there were a fair amount of people that were commenting that you really needed that hope. That was the more important thing. And I want to agree with you on that. Like, hey, it's not everything. I see a lot of people who are like, okay, well, I want to see some sign that things could be better. I want to see that, you know, maybe my husband or my wife actually wants to be in the marriage. And then if I can see some of those signs, then I will take some action. And I've seen it too many times where that other person is saying the same thing. Like, if only I saw some sort of sign from my partner, then I wouldn't need to go towards divorce here. And if only I saw them taking it, like some sort of indication that they actually care, that they actually want things to be better or different. And that's why we're saying what we're saying. It's rather than both of you sitting there waiting for the other person to show the sign that things could be better, it's better to just be that person yourself, to be that person who is taking that first step and showing those signs. So yeah, like you were saying, like what do we do as some of those first steps, those first actions? I know we talk a lot about path, and I still like that sort of model. For those of you who aren't familiar, our path model, we talk about it as perspective, action, telling a new story, and hope. So like action and hope are in there. But I do think it's really best to start off with that perspective, to make sure that there's some understanding. You were just talking about Matt. Like, it was for Matt, he didn't just right off the bat go to his wife and say, hey, let's put a pause on this. There's a lot of setup that was needed, right, Heather? And I do think that really understanding what went wrong, specifically like why the other person feels like things are impossible to fix, and also having that understanding of why it didn't get fixed sooner, is probably at the core of trying to set up some of these first action steps. I do think that like taking some of those decisive actions and knowing what to say to the partner, like having some of those first conversations, it's really scary. And I do think it takes a little bit of support to know how to approach these really delicate situations. And so, yeah, a lot of our audience has told us that they have no idea what they need to do to start putting those brakes on things and get divorce off the table. I don't know. Like, what do you think, Heather? What are some misconceptions at this stage? Or what are some mistakes that people make?
Yeah, there's so many common ones. And I really feel like if people just could understand how to make appropriate requests and to build safety in the relationship first, then that's going to go so long, much further into the restoration. But so many of them are trying to have their spouse drop divorce completely, right? They're trying to push for a deeper level of connection or commitment too soon, and it just absolutely backfires. So it's not necessarily necessary to convince your spouse to drop the idea of divorce right away. And you can do that in smaller steps that are actually going to get you better results. So In other words, like asking them to just love you and come back to the marriage right away is a huge mistake that we often see people making. Why is that, Mark? Why is that a big mistake?
Well, I think a lot of like what is going on is a lot of this is about trust. If people go in and say, well, no, please work on the marriage, let's fix things, I think we should recommit. If they're considering divorce, they don't trust in the ability for the marriage to go through that. They've had that hope that things would get better, and no one has taken any amount of action here. And so all that pushing, saying, hey, let's go to therapy, let's work on this. If you're getting a lot of pushback from that, that's exactly what's going on. They're thinking to themselves, I've already tried to fix things. Nothing is going to work. We have an impossible problem here. Mm-hmm. And so these first stages, a lot of this is going to be about, like I was saying earlier, that understanding and just setting up some ability to establish some amount of trust that things could be different. It becomes a lot easier, I think, to start asking for some smaller concessions, maybe putting a pause on some smaller things or asking for some participation in some smaller solutions rather than that big solution of reconciliation. Even if like your partner is really open to the idea of reconciliation, I still think it's like better to start off small and say, hey, look, let's slow down. Why don't we see what we can do to have some better communication? We would need that regardless. Let's see what we can do to have a little bit more respect here, to make you feel less overwhelmed, to whatever it happens to be that your partner is complaining about. All those little things that add up to this big, overwhelming mess of an impossible problem. So I do think that a lot of this, being able to hit that pause button then, is it's a lot more about focusing on solving those problems that you're both interested in resolving. We talk about building some common goals. Sometimes I use the term of, here's this acceptable arena, the space that we can both operate in. And we know it's okay to come into this arena and try to fix a few things, even if what's outside of that arena is off limits for the time being. So like getting to that point where we can ask for that pause button means we are now building everything up in this little arena. We're saying, okay, we can fix this. And do we see that these things are solvable? You start taking away some of that strength of, or that need to go to that big extreme solution, I'm going to put it in quotes, solution of divorce, because you've now resolved a lot of the smaller, more manageable issues that add up to that.
Agreed. So, yeah. Mark, would you say real quick that most people, when they come to us, feel like there's probably no acceptable arena, using your term here, but there's nothing that they could agree upon. There's nothing that they could have possibly in common. They don't want the same things. Their spouse wants something completely different than them. And they don't realize that there are things that we do help our clients work through to find that common ground, to find those kind of common goals and the place where they can come together to create some solutions, that they can be unified. And like, we both want the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I've seen a lot. What have you experienced with that?
Well, I would say in almost all cases, there's going to be some amount of needed ongoing communication, whether it's because of co-parenting relationships, or it's just hard to untangle a long life together. So almost always we can find some amount of common ground. If need be, I sometimes default back into looking for some basic emotional needs. So we can boil a lot of problems down into those sort of ideas. Like, hey, we're going to need to co-parent together. Why don't we make sure that there's a lot of, there's good enough respect between the two of us? Hey, you were complaining about how you never felt heard. Why don't we make sure that that's resolved and that you feel like I'm listening to you? Because even if we're going to end up divorced, I think that's still going to be important. So like a lot of these reasons, you can go and look at the things that they're complaining about, and there's probably some angle, some reason to at least approach that problem. Even if they don't want to actively like participate in a lot of solutions, if they don't want to actively like go to therapy or whatnot, they'll probably be a lot more open to you taking some steps, some action first around solving that problem. And I do think that's like a great place to start. So a very common issue, like you mentioned there, Heather, that there's just no common ground here. There's no acceptable arena. There's nothing that we can talk about. I would say there's almost always something there.
And so we help you uncover what that might be, because it can be challenging to see, especially if your spouse is like, I want to be with this other person, or I don't want to ever talk to you again, right? But there are things that we help our clients find that agreement on, and it's a good place to start. Now, one thing that you mentioned, or you brought into this scenario here, is that you said, you know, even if we get divorced, we still want to have good communication. We still want to be respectful. I still want to feel like you feel heard, right? And I love that, because this is going right into one of the really important elements of helping your spouse hit the pause button, where they're no longer pulling away from you more, is you're taking the pressure off. So even in that situation, you're not doing it to say, I want you to come back. Please come back. Give me another chance. I'm going to show you that you can be happier. But, you know, it's not about that. It's saying, hey, this is one of the issues between us. I would like for it to be resolved. I'd like for it to be improved. I would like to become a better person myself. And I know that we're going to need this, whether we get divorced or we don't. And so that really helps take that pressure off, so your spouse isn't feeling like it's a manipulation or anything, to try to just get them back, right? And so that's one of the really key points, is taking that pressure off. So helping them feel safe enough that they don't have to keep pulling away from you more. The more pressure you keep putting on the relationship, that's going to negate the result that you want to see. All right. What else about focusing on solving problems that you're both interested in resolving?
Mm-hmm. We've been talking about that a little bit here, but you know, we talk about on this podcast here a lot about establishing some common goals. And while it's a lot easier to focus on perhaps the things that your partner wants at first, you know, a lot of people might put up some resistance to other things, but you know, it's hard to say no to some to some help with the things that you want. What I'm getting at here, though, is like when we're trying to establish some common goals, if you start there, if you start trying to really focus on their concerns and their needs, it becomes a little bit easier down the road to start asking for things yourself, even in some extreme circumstances, like when your partner's asking for divorce. If their concern was feeling heard and feeling respected, or wanting to be free, and you start really focusing on that and supporting that, then it becomes easier for you to say, hey, you know, I've been really trying to work through this, and I've been trying to support you here, and I'd really appreciate being able to talk to you about a few things. I'd really appreciate being able to resolve this other issue that I'm wanting to deal with. And you can start to build a little bit more of that reciprocation into things as you keep going. But, you know, I do think, like, with all of this, the real challenge that most of our clients face is how to convince their partner to simply put a pause on things rather than really fully committing to divorce. And that's a lot of what we're trying to discuss right here. How do you actually convince them to say, you know what, maybe I can put the divorce aside. Maybe I don't need that right now. Let's see if we can build up some solutions. So, like, Heather, what is it that we do to really make that decision a lot easier?
What do we do to make that decision easier? Well, again, we're going to take the pressure off, and we're going to make sure that we do it with a lot of empathy and understanding. I know that's definitely something that we want to use. I don't know. I'm not really quite sure where you're going with that one, Mark.
That's okay. I put you on the spot there.
I know that it works. So what do you do, Mark? You're the head marriage coach. How do we help them to embrace that? Because that's a great question. I know I've seen it happen. And what do you think works the best?
Yeah, I put you on the spot. I do a little bit more with the clients themselves. And so it's okay. In terms of like really making that a viable option, the two things that I think really need to be focused in on is, like, we've talked a lot about here about taking action, resolving some issues. I put this the issues that need to be resolved into two categories. Like, one I call the impossible problem. This is the thing that your partner, if they're calling for divorce, the thing that they say, this absolutely can't be fixed. There's nothing that we can do here. And then I like to put some focus on the root issues. All the things that prevented the relationship from healing beforehand, like the breaks in communication, the not being able to have empathy or understanding for the other person, all those things that didn't allow for there to be healing earlier. I focus on those two things because, you know, those are, I think, at the heart of like what causes someone to make the decision for divorce. They say, one, these problems have built up too much. It's become so overwhelming that it's impossible. Besides that, we have no way of knowing whether this is just going to happen again. Like, the impossible problem's too much, and our patterns or behavior aren't going to allow us for us to heal in the future, even if we do resolve this right now. In essence, like, by focusing in on those areas, we're trying to provide some hope that things could be changed. We're not trying to say that, okay, everything is better right now. I actually think that that's a mistake when a marriage is in crisis and there's some consideration for a divorce. It's a mistake to say, okay, we figured out these issues and now everything's better. And now why don't we move back in together? And why don't we, you know, kiss and make up? That's why we talk about like getting to this point of putting the pause button on, because like they went to that solution of divorce for a reason. They said, okay, it's so overwhelming. I need to consider the option of just exiting out, and taking a step from that position all the way back to let's get back together is a lot. And I do think that it takes some time building up trust, showing that there are some changes and having some patience and acceptance as things are getting better to actually make them really see that the concerns that they had are valid and that there is something that's being done about it. So this is like, that's what I'm, you know, like what I'm looking for in these scenarios is, can we tackle those problems? Can we build up trust in the solutions to those things? And generally, if we can say yes to that, it's just a little bit of like about the details and actually getting the other person to say, okay, why don't we take a step back from divorce?
Right. And sometimes I'm just going to say, share from my experience, what I have seen is sometimes you can clearly just ask them, are you okay to put this on pause? Like, can we give it 6 months of time? Can you get your partner to agree to give you 6 months to kind of just see how things go? I mean, is it easier to ask your spouse and is it more effective to ask them to take divorce off the table or to give you some time to think about things, to try to work things out, to see if things, you know, how things are going to go? Because it's a big decision and you want to make sure that it's handled carefully. And so it's a much easier ask to say, hey, can we give this some time? Can we kind of slow things down? I want to think about it. I'm sure you probably want to think about it. I want to be respectful to where you're coming from. But I'd really like to see if we could, you know, give it just some time before we make this final decision. And oftentimes that conversation goes well and you are able to get that. Other times it might not be the very best thing to do given your specific situation. So that's why it's really important that you have, you know, that expert guidance on your relationship. Sometimes even asking them to just, can we give this some time? Can we give it 3 months, 6 months before we talk to lawyers again or whatever, right? Even that conversation might backfire. But what we can help you do is still hit the pause button where they no longer feel the need to pull away from you more, right? Move closer towards divorce. And that's what we do again by taking the pressure off, finding kind of that common ground. And I'm going to throw in here often interrupting the pattern, which is a lot about what Mark's talking about here. When you're saying, hey, you know, you didn't feel heard before, you were saying that I didn't listen to you, that you didn't feel heard or respected here. I'd really like to show you that I respect you. And I do want to hear you and understand where you're coming from. And so when you change that pattern of what you used to do and what you're doing now, it's going to get their attention. And so maybe even without having to say words, you know, like asking them, hey, can we put pause on this? Can we slow things down? Can we give it some time? Your spouse is actually going to do that naturally because they're going to see, oh, there's something different here. And they're not going to feel the need to pull away from you more. Right. But most people, right, Mark, when they're faced with the possibility of divorce, of their spouse leaving them, of them having an affair and their betrayal or whatever's going on, they start panicking, right? We've talked about this numerous times. So if you guys have heard our podcast before and you know what some of the most common mistakes are, leave a comment and let us know what are some of the common mistakes that most people make when they're in so much fear, because your spouse is leaving. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel secure. You feel betrayed. There's so much pain. There's so many heightened emotions. You might even have some of your own guilt about things that have gone on. And so when we're in that kind of state, we tend to just react, very heightened emotions, and we react out of instinct. So I often talk about this in the masterclass, but I'd love to hear your perspective, Mark, because you get to see this more like in the trenches with people, right? About some of these mistakes that people are making when their spouse wants out.
Yeah, so I'm actually thinking of a recent case that I was working on. I had a gentleman come in and he said, okay, oh no, my wife is wanting a divorce. She's come to me and she says that she's been unhappy for years. I've done a little bit of digging and I've noticed that she's like leaving work during the middle of the day and going places. So there's a lot to be concerned about. Now, I worked with this gentleman for a couple months and things were looking really good because he's like, okay, my wife is really happy that I'm taking some action. She's agreed to speak with you. And I started talking with the both of them. What was interesting though, is everyone agreed to put a pause on things. And everyone was like, okay, let's just take a step back. Let's try to fix a few things. And it wasn't more than like a couple of weeks later where they're like, okay, I think we're good. We're fine now. And I was like, I don't know if that's the case. And they stopped setting appointments. This is one of the mistakes that I see people make is why we talk about putting a pause on things and why we say take it a little bit slow once you start getting the cooperation of your partner and why you want to really think of this as a longer or bigger process is because it wasn't more than like a couple months later that this gentleman was back seeing me and he was saying, okay, now my wife is saying that she wants a divorce again and she doesn't want to talk to anybody because that didn't work last time. And like those sort of situations, like where people were too quick to think that everything was fixed is a big mistake. Is one of those. I also see a lot of other situations where even with this whole process of like trying to find some common ground or trying to put a pause on things, puts way too much pressure on the idea of reconciliation and that things are better, that we're moving towards towards fixing things, that we are committing. And it's much the same way, much the same mistake that I was just talking about, is that things were moving too quickly and they were assuming that they were getting better. But a lot of this all kind of ties together with a lot of what we've said in the past. It's this idea of begging, pleading, getting desperate, getting emotional, focusing so much on what you need yourself and not being able to take the bigger perspective. Not being able to say, okay, if it's gotten to this point, we're in trouble and we need to be very deliberate about this. We need to be very careful. We need to be very mindful of the other person. We need to actually specifically work on building up hope. Much more so than like building up a new relationship, there's kind of this sense of needing to make sure that everything feels much more solid when you're going through a crisis like this. And so I would say like the number one problem is focusing way too much on what's needed right in front of you, that strong emotional need, and not taking the bigger, wider perspective and having a little bit of patience with things.
Agreed. And there's actually a biological reason behind that. So I want everyone to give themselves some grace because this is something we do, right? I mean, how many times have we looked back on how we reacted and like, why did I say that? Why did I do that? That doesn't even sound like me. That isn't even me. And it's like this other thing comes out of us, right? And we just tend to be very instinctual. We are focused on ourselves. The limbic system of the brain gets turned on. That's a fight, flight, or freeze response. And you get tunnel focus. In fact, my son just did his first jujitsu competition, and his coaches kept working with him like, Benjamin, you've got to relax. Like, you've got to try to be calm, because if you get worked up, if you get angry, if you get freaked out, like overly emotional, your focus, like even your tunnel of vision becomes very, very narrow. And that happens in aviation as well. Ben talks to his students about that, where if you get too emotional, then your tunnel of focus tends to get very, very narrow. And because we are so emotional, we can't, like Mark said, see that bigger picture. And that's a huge part of the coaching that we do, is help you not just rely on those biological instincts, because they're going to self-sabotage us. They're going to make us react in low value ways. They're going to make us act out of desperation, go into manipulation or pleading or trying to even threaten them to try to get them back. All these different things that we do that are absolutely backfire. We know they only push our spouse further away, but most people stay there. Most people stay there. They don't process through those emotions and choose to react or to respond here in a higher, different way. And so when you learn how to feel the emotions, because they're not bad, right? And you can process through what's going on and then choose how you're going to react. That's changing and interrupting the pattern as well. And it's also helping you get outside of that very self-centered focus. It's all about protecting me. I want to feel safe. I want them to come back so I don't feel alone. I want them to change so that I can feel secure here and like I'm good enough and I have value, right? It's not about them changing or doing anything. It's about you now feel good and securing yourself, and you can start to gain perspective into where they are coming from. And that's going to change the pattern as well. So it's all about identifying those patterns that you're in right now and changing those patterns, you start to get some different results, right? If you're in that heightened emotional state and you're all focused on yourself, which is normal, it's a natural biological instinct, but it's not going to get you where you want to go, right? Just know that your partner's not going to come back just because you're upset. Mm-hmm. They're not. No one comes back if they're already wanting out and they're like, oh, you're so upset. Now I have all this empathy for you. They're not. They're in a very selfish, self-centered, focused state right now. And so are you. And so who's going to give there? How are things ever going to change? One of you is going to have to do something different here. And that's exactly what we help our clients go through. So you're not left doing it alone. We do have a free guide on how to help your spouse become willing to work on the marriage, even if they're unwilling right now, and help you process through some of those emotions and learn how to interrupt that pattern so they will hit the pause button. So if you want that free guide, just type the word willing in the comments below and I will send that free guide to you, because that it is a process. And there are different steps and actions. We're talking about action today that you want to take so that you're not left to kind of to our own vices, our own instincts there. Get into your higher reasoning part of your brain, right? And start to take some positive action. And so at this point, the best bet is to start taking some of those actions, right? Taking action on solving the problems that your partner wants resolved, again, is going to go a long way instead of you focusing completely on yourself and everything that you want at this point and understanding what your partner is really wanting. That is going to open the door for them to want to communicate more, to not pull away from you more, and to help you understand what that impossible problem that they may have created, right? And help you understand what those root issues are and help you see where that common ground. What's that word that you use? You say it so well. What's the term that you use of where the common area that they can play in? What's that word that you use, Mark?
The acceptable arena.
Acceptable arena. Thank you. Yeah. So it will help you uncover what that acceptable arena is with your spouse as well. So Mark, let's touch on the impossible problem a little bit more.
So yeah, the whole thing with this, you know, if we're going to get to that pause button, as I mentioned earlier, I do think that that's key. The understanding what your partner views as the impossible problem, understanding what the underlying causes are or the root issues are, and building up trust and resolving those things, absolutely key to getting to that pause button. Just for reference, the impossible problem, very specifically, is that problem that your partner doesn't think can be fixed. These are things like, you know, like, my husband never listens to me. They're controlling. They, you know, they're always thinking about themselves. These are general statements that sound very fixed and permanent. Oftentimes I hear them come out as complaints like that, like they're fixed, permanent, they're immovable. Your partner might have even talked about having tried fixing something in the past. Maybe they tried speaking up, or maybe they tried doing something else, but for some reason or another, they view a specific problem as immovable. And it is your responsibility then to give some hope that that specific impossible problem isn't impossible anymore. Root issues are a little bit more tricky to identify, because it's hard to look at your own marriage and say what patterns contributed to us not solving this. But, you know, I look at a problem or a complaint like, you never listened to me, you know, and I think to myself, well, why didn't this come up? Why didn't it get resolved before? And quite often, these root issues are things like a lack of communication, or maybe there's a mismatch in styles. Maybe we have like a pursuer-avoider sort of dynamic. Perhaps it is really being mindful of someone quietly trying to assert themselves and being supportive of that. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, in a good, healthy, stable relationship, there are things built into the relationship that allow people to resolve those little concerns that come up here and there. And for one reason or another, when a relationship has gotten to the point of crisis and divorce, those sort of patterns have been interrupted and they're prevented. So it's very important, if you're going to say, hey, let's put a pause on things, you have to have some knowledge of how things could be better permanently, and how you're not going to get stuck dealing with the same issue over and over and over again. So are you going to say, hey, look, I don't think we talked to each other before. I don't think we opened up to each other. I'm going to be more open now. I'm going to be more encouraged. You have to have some concept of that before you ask them to put things on pause, before you even ask them to consider putting the divorce aside. Otherwise, I do think that most cases will fail. So great. That's where I think the pause button comes in, the impossible problem. That's kind of like my summary and how to get there. I know it's a big, broad subject that we're talking about here. And we're not purposely being vague here. It's just, there's a lot of things that are specifically applicable to probably your specific case, all of you. Right.
So leave a comment and let us know, based on what Mark shared about this impossible problem that your spouse has created, right? What do you think the impossible problem is? Because you might be able to identify it. You'll never change. I can't be happy here. I'll never trust you. I already tried to fix this. It didn't work. I'm done. It's over, right? This big impossible problem. So leave a comment. Let us know what it is. And we will send you some resources and trainings that we have. We have a full masterclass showing you how to overcome your spouse's impossible problem. So just leave a comment with what you think your spouse's impossible problem is. And we will send you some guides and resources on that completely free. And then the root issues, like Mark mentioned, are trickier. They're often not ones that you can see yourself. And that is why it takes an expert, someone from the outside, that can diagnose what's really going on here and give you the right treatment plan, the right actions that you need to take immediately to start to see some different results. And when you start to do those new things and get those different results, now you will have more hope in the ultimate outcome of your relationship being restored. So again, bring it back to the hope issue. Don't wait for hope to start to take action on things. Take action towards where you want to go, and then you will feel the hope and experience the evidence of it coming about. So it's only going to be possible to hit this pause button once we've addressed these two issues, right? And that gives us some glimmer of hope of things being resolved. So if you want help with those root issues, comment root issues, and we will give you a quiz that you can take to see if you can save your marriage or not. And you'll have the opportunity to get a free marriage analysis with us if you want to. And that will go diagnose exactly what's going on in your marriage and show you what the right steps to take are so that you can have that hope of things being ultimately restored. So Mark, do you have any final examples of how this works, of how we don't want to wait necessarily for hope, but we want to start doing something different? Because maybe your spouse is wanting, you know, you to make the first move, and you're sitting there waiting for them to make the first move. And you guys are both looking for the evidence of like, I'm not really willing to work on this until I know it's going to work, because I don't want to put all the work in only to be heartbroken again, right? Mm-hmm. Of our clients that say, you know what? I want to do this because I want to know that I gave my marriage every chance possible. And if there's even a small sliver of hope this can turn around, then I want to do it. I'm not going to wait to know if it's going to work. I'm just going to start taking some action. And kind of how that all played out with everything we talked about. We talked about possible problem. We talked about root issues. We talked about the acceptable arena, taking the pressure off and not making those mistakes. So I think it's really cool.
Let's go through a successful case here. And I'll change the name because I haven't talked with this person to make sure it's okay. But I'm thinking of we'll say that her name is Susan. And so Susan was really, she was a much more direct person. And throughout her many years of marriage with her husband, the result of being very direct and to the point and whatnot led to him feeling like he was just kind of following her around and doing what she wanted to do. He wasn't feeling heard, wasn't feeling appreciated. And so he left. He said he was done. And so Susan came to me and we worked through this. And we, you know, the impossible problem here, the thing that couldn't be solved, is whether she would change, whether she would actually care about other people, was how he was putting it. Would she actually care enough about other people to listen to what they had to say? And she did. We helped her to really try and sit down and take the time to understand her husband. It did involve giving him a little bit of space here and there. And, you know, eventually they were able to come together and start. He was able to consider speaking to us as a couple. Why did he even consider that? It's because she took several months just to demonstrate that things could be different. Not only like was she demonstrating that she could hear him out and that what he wanted matters, but we identified that root issue. We said, okay, here's this situation where she's not always aware that he's upset. Their communication wasn't really good. So, you know, she's like, okay, this is why this didn't get solved earlier. And I really want to support you speaking up for yourself. And I want to make sure that I'm taking the time to listen. And he was a little bit hesitant at first. And he was kind of angry and very blaming at first, but she sat and she listened. And she demonstrated that something was different. So he said, okay, let's take a chance on this. And as he started attending, he started softening quite a bit. And he started speaking up more and feeling more comfortable with that, to the point where they went on their happy way. I told him, you guys are doing awesome. I don't think there's much more that I can do to support you. You're on a good trajectory. You have all the tools that if things come up again, I feel confident that the two of them could solve that. So it did start with her acting by herself and her taking some action and building up to the point where she could say, okay, why don't we put a pause on this? Why don't we like not consider this right off the getting back together right off the bat, but let's put the divorce on hold. And I'll tell you, even from that point, it still took another 4 or 5 months before he even considered coming back. But Yeah, they ended up moving back in together right before I ended up dismissing them from services. They didn't need me anymore. So, it's the best case. It's kind of weird being in a job where I'm trying to work to the point where I'm not needed anymore.
Yep. All right. So that is a beautiful example. You know, she took the pressure off and she demonstrated some change. She interrupted the pattern. She understood the root issue with your help and guidance, because it's hard to see it without it. And then in time, as she was consistent with her action, that opened his willingness to talk about things, to take divorce off the table, and eventually move back home. So that's a beautiful example of how this works. Mark, did she have a lot of hope at the beginning that it was going to turn around?
She was very emotional and very upset. And she was a little bit different in that she was a very determined person. So I think, you know, well, okay, she would say that she had a lot of hope, but there was a lot of points where she was feeling very insecure about the situation, very hesitant, very unsure of whether everything was going to go well. So I guess deep down, not really.
Yeah. And so if you're feeling insecure, if you're feeling like you don't know if things are going to turn around, you feel like this is hopeless, like you don't know if it's going to work out, you're not alone and you're okay. That's a normal thing. What you really need to do is focus more on what you want to create and what kind of relationship you want to have, and then start to take some action towards that. Now, this goes really well into our marriage myth buster, which is that hope alone can save a marriage. Mark, thoughts on that?
Hope alone. I mean, that's essentially what we've been talking about this whole time, but these Mythbusters, these myths, we always take them from comments, either from things we've heard from our clients or comments from our Facebook groups or elsewhere. And I always find this interesting, because even when we were asking earlier, several people were saying, okay, the most important thing is hope, 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 hope. And I think another word for this that we could insert here is faith. And don't get us wrong, I like the concept of faith and hope, and those are really positive, great things to have. But there very much needs to be, in these crisis situations, clear and decisive action to address the concerns within the marriage. Otherwise, I think the danger of just saying, okay, I'm going to pray, I'm going to hope, I'm going to just sit around hoping that things will be better, maybe they'll give me a sign or something. If your partner's saying that they want a divorce and that's what your response is, you're going to appear out of touch. You're going to appear as though the concern that they are putting out there does not matter, because they can't necessarily read your mind. They can't say, okay, well, I can see how hopeful they are inside. They're going to see that, okay, no one's actually doing anything about this big concern of mine. And the impossible problem becomes even more impossible, because they say, okay, even when I threaten divorce, nothing is happening. So no, I do not think that hope alone can save a marriage. I think that it is a good companion. It's a good friend to have along, but I do think that action really needs to be a little bit more in the forefront.
Right. In my experience, and this is a sensitive subject because I am a person of faith. I do believe in God. And I often see comments in the group like, I'm just going to turn it over to God. I'm going to just, and these are the ones that I want to kind of address in tandem, maybe a little bit, because I feel like they're somewhat related, right? This idea of faith or hope, and that's all I have left. As I'll sometimes see comments from members of our group and our community saying, the only thing I can do, the only thing I have left to do is pray. All right. And I pray. And I went through cancer and I prayed, okay? And I believe in the power of prayer and I believe the power of intention and I believe in the power of God. But I believe that God empowers us to take action and to be led and guided to solve our problems. Noah didn't wait for rain to build the ark, right? He received some direction and he moved, he took action, and you can see that repeated. So people of faith, in my opinion, aren't the ones that are just kind of throwing their hands up helplessly, like, save me. I mean, there's that story, right, of the people, of the the person praying on the sinking ship. And he's like, God, save me. Right. And a helicopter comes. And he's like, no, I'm waiting for God to save me. Right. And then another boat comes. He's like, no, I'm waiting for God to save me. He didn't take any of the actions that God was providing for him to take. And so I guess that's just a little bit of the insight that I wanted to share, is that I believe when we come with faith, and even to God or even in prayer, and we're wanting things to be resolved in our lives, he's going to be giving us direction. Like, the answers are going to come. And whether you believe in God or not, like, when you decide that I want to improve this in my life, I want to solve this, when you make that level of decision, then the way or the how will manifest itself. There's going to be people that come, there's going to be programs that come, there's going to be that podcast that just nails you and you're like, oh my goodness, this is what I needed, right? Or your friend is going to say something, like, the answer is going to come, but it's up to you to take action on that. Because unless you act, then you're just kind of like the person on the boat that's just waiting for God to come pick you up. And he might, I'm not going to say he's not, okay? But more often than not, he's going to have us, and the way that the universe works, right? Whether God or universe, whatever works for you, is that you need to take action to move yourself forward towards what you want to do. The way will make itself manifest. So take action as it comes to you. When I was going through cancer, I didn't just say, God, save me, right? I took action. I did chemotherapy. I did what he led me to do. I took those actions that led to the positive outcome. So empower yourself. Yes, have faith. Yes, believe. Yes, have prayer, and follow where it leads you. Take those actions as they come to you. All right. So if you guys want that guide on how to turn an unwilling spouse into someone willing to work on the marriage with you, again, just leave a comment, say willing in the comments below, and we will send that to you. And next week, we're going to share with you, beyond basic communication, some unconventional tips to save your marriage and rekindle intimacy. Thank you for joining us today, Mark, and we can't wait to see all of your marriage thrive.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.